a poem by Muriel Rukeyser called Saint Roach, who, as I'm sure you all know, is the patron saint of plague victims. For that I never knew you, I only learned to dread you. For that I never touched you, they told me you are filth. They showed me by every action to despise your kind. For that I saw my people making war on you. I could not tell you apart one from another, for that in childhood I lived in places clear of you. For that all the people I knew met you by crushing you, stamping you to death. They poured boiling water on you. They flushed you down. For that I could not tell one from another. Only that you were dark and fast on your feet and slender, not like me. For that I did not know your poems, and that I do not know any of your sayings, and that I cannot speak or read your language, and that I do not sing your songs, and that I do not teach our children to eat your food or know your poems or sing your songs, but that we say you are filthing our food, but that we know you not at all. Yesterday, I looked at one of you for the first time. You were lighter than the others in colour. That was neither good nor bad. I was really looking for the first time. You seemed troubled and witty. Today I touched one of you for the first time. You were startled. You ran. You fled away, fast as a dancer, light, strange, and lovely to the touch. I reach. I touch, I begin to know you. I'm sure you're aware that there are two types of people in the world. There are those who believe that there are two types of people in the world, and there are those who don't. And they are never going to agree about this. Now, you might see that the title of the sermon is Kinetic Theology. Now, one of the very few things that I remember from my high school physics class is that kinetic means movement. So kinetic energy is energy related to and created by movement. Now, I took the service here for you back about 2 months ago, but you don't really know me. Why would you trust me? And yet I'm going to ask you to do something that is going to be very uncomfortable for you. And there'll be some of you who will be bristling, but I ask you to be kinetic anyway. Because I need you to know that there really are two types of people in this world, and you need to know a little bit about the other kind. So, all of you who are native Californians, I want you to sit on this side of the sanctuary, and all of you who are non-native Californians, please be on this side. So, I need to tell you non-native Californians a few home truths about these people over here. We know, don't we, that they are the granola people. Full of fruits, nuts and flakes. They're kind of hippy-dippy liberals. They probably enjoy substances. And, you know, they just kept going west because they hit the ocean and there was no further that they could get away from. Now, we know about them, don't we? These modern-day interlopers. These carpetbaggers who come here taking over your land, who bring their conservative New England uptight values. And yet you try to be accommodating, but let's face it, and they outnumber you. You know, we need a wall. So, thank you for doing that. I hope you now you are a little bit clearer about the people on the other side of the aisle. Let's change again to omnivorous, vegan or vegetarian, or other food allergies. Omnivorous? So what you need to know about these omnivorous people is that they could not care less about animals or the environment or the economy that is based on the exploitation of animals and the inefficient, environmentally unfriendly way of raising meat. You need to know who you're dealing with here. There are a few things you need to know about this crowd here. They are so self-righteous and prissy. You know, they think because they don't eat meat that they're somehow morally superior, looking down on you guys who like a little bit of red meat action. And basically, it's not really American not to eat meat. I mean, you need to know this. All right, third category. Men and women. Well, my apologies, I should have said identified as men, identified as women. So, we guys know about women, don't we? You know, we have to understand that they can't bother their pretty little heads about important things, and that, they really... their places in the home, and they appreciate us telling them what they should be doing with their lives and their bodies, and that's why we're here. And you know about men, hopeless at multitasking, who really, they're kind of sweet, but they're emotionally withdrawn and repressive, and they're just kind of clueless when it comes to the world. And then fourth and final category, those of you who are comfortable with the word God, and those of you who are uncomfortable with the word God. Not about your belief, but your comfort with the word. God. Now I can't remember. This was comfortable, wasn't it? So what you know about these people who are comfortable with God is that essentially they haven't really grown up intellectually. They still believe in fairy tales. They still kind of have this imaginary friend in the sky. And, they just haven't progressed into the 21st century. And what you know about the people on that side of the aisle is that they are totally without moral compass. They have no sense of ultimate conscience or answerability. They are just kind of, they have no soul, basically. That's what we know about people who are not comfortable with the word God. So if you wish to now return to where you were at the beginning of that, you may. If you want to stay where you are, that's fine too. Thank you. I don't know if you were keeping accurate tally, but I suspect that there was no other one person who was on your side of the aisle in every single of those four categories. That we were all mixed up, that we are all more than just one category. We are all more complex than simple stereotypes. We are all more human than otherwise. And we live in a time of deep polarization, where people look at each other from the other side of the aisle and shout and point fingers and fear and accuse and deeply distrust. But we are all more complex and human than otherwise. We all share this sanctuary together. And yes, that is deeply Unitarian Universalist. I remember I had a ministry in New Hampshire in the 90s, and one member who joined during my ministry and became president for 2 years. He was the best president of a congregation that I've ever had. He was smart, he was loyal, he was hardworking. After I left, he then stood for election to the New Hampshire House of Representatives and was elected, which is no big deal, really, because in New Hampshire, about one person in seven is in the New Hampshire House of Representatives. And he was deeply conservative, a true, true Republican. He angered many people in the congregation with his political views. And if all I knew about him was what I read about his voting history as a member of the New Hampshire House, I would be tempted to put him in a stereotype. But for my 2 years of working closely with him, I knew, and we would have deeply engaged political conversations. I knew how conservative he was politically, but I also knew he was absolutely dedicated to his family. He had his own business and was a superb employer who cared for each and every one of his employees, who was active in the local town community in a most generous and time, not only generous with money, but with his time. I knew him to be the deeply good person that he is, with totally diametrically opposed political views from mine. I'm not a Democrat. I was not a Bernie Sanders supporter. He's far too conservative for me. I've been infected by this terrible thing called European socialism, which you have to avoid like the plague. It's so much easier just to demonize the other side. It's so much easier just to project your own fears and your own suspicions, whether in the political arena, and goodness knows, as you all know, what's going on in the political arena right now and how we are being invited and encouraged to polarize and fear. But even in God debates, God or no God, there are mutual accusations, there are mutual mistrust. There's a lot of people talking, shouting, and not a whole lot of listening. Many churches and many politicians define themselves by who they are not, by who they are against, by who they want us to be against also. And engagement with the other is shunned, it is feared, it is suggested that strength and safety is to be found in isolation. That's not what we seek to do here in a Unitarian Universalist community. Whatever your personal beliefs, and however you came to them, we gather in a Unitarian Universalist community in the conviction that we are each enriched by active engagement with others who disagree with us. Not just that we tolerate each other, but that we each are actively enriched by our engagement with each other. So if you are a humanist, I hope that you become a better humanist Unitarian Universalist by having real conversation with others within these walls who are pagan or progressive Christian or whatever other hue they might be. And if you are a progressive Christian Unitarian Universalist, that you are deepened and enriched in your faith by your active, open-minded engagement with those with whom you disagree. We do not come here to reinforce our own theological silos. We come here because we believe in diversity. We believe that whatever color we are part of a spectrum. And it is the spectrum which makes up all of light. There is no part of the spectrum that is more light than any other part of the spectrum. Being in the world, being faithful in the world, is not a zero-sum game. I do not become more right by telling you that you are wrong. You do not become more right by telling me that I am wrong. We become more right when we listen and engage with each other so that our own truths become magnified and enriched and deepened. A great little vignette. When I was a student for the ministry in England, my brother and his family came, and he also was studying for the ministry in the same college, with his two young children, the younger of whom was 4 years old at the time. They came from Sydney, not a place known for snow. One morning, it was snowing, and my nephew and my niece, aged then 7 and 4, were up in their attic room looking out on this wonder of snow that they had never seen before, looking out of one window together, a dormer window. And then the 4-year-old girl went to the other dormer window, 10 feet down the room. "Look, Andrew," she said, "it's snowing out of this window as well." The sky is not determined by the shape of the window through which you are looking at it. The sky is the sky. We each look at it through our own window, but no window is better than another. We gather consciously to relate to and learn from each other. As the great Transylvanian pioneer of Unitarianism in the 16th century, Francis David, said, "We don't have to think alike to love alike." And in this season of division and polarization, when there are loud and strident voices urging us to separate and isolate and polarize and demonize, we are called to remind ourselves that we don't have to think alike, to love alike, and that we are called to engage with the whole person, not with the two-dimensional cardboard cutout that is so much easier intellectually and emotionally for us to project our own image against. We don't have to think alike to love alike, but we do need to love. We do need to stand on the side of love and to speak up on the side of love and to walk on the side of love, even with those with whom we most intensely disagree. So may it be.